it is time to get our Thursday view from the north. He's doing his thing for Comcast Sports Net. Keep up online. Visit CSNNW.com. Catch videos and stories on Facebook or Facebook.com/AaronFentress CSN. Follow on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Talking ball on Comcast, channel 737 on my Xfinity system. Mr. Fentress, how are you on this Thursday, sir?
I'm chilling, man. How are you?
Okay. The host is fine. It's always people are much more concerned about how you're doing. So another barn burner in the NBA Finals last night. This time, man, the Cavs dish it out. They win by 30. So which school of thought are you buying into? Game on, Cleveland still has a shot, or was that a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound, and Golden State is in command? What do you make of all this? And I know the one thing you said on Twitter I think was accurate. Boring!
It's horrible. This is... Okay, I'm not shocked Cleveland won. I'm shocked they won by 30. I'm definitely not shocked Kyrie Irving came to life, because you figured he would at home. He just seems like he's that type of player right now, where he's just not ready for the big stage on the road. But he delivered at home for sure. I'm glad that they made some adjustments. They did some things differently to try and get themselves back in the series. People are making a big deal out of the Kevin Love situation with him missing it, and they win. I don't think they won because Kevin Love was out. I think they won because everyone on the team played better. LeBron was a little bit more aggressive, had over 30 instead of settling for that, being in the 20s. And Golden State had a bad night. But the 30-point spread with, what was the spread of game two, 20-something?
Oh, yeah, it's been ridiculous. The other one, it was more than that. Remember, the second game was 110-77.
Yeah, that's right, 33. Okay, so 63-point swing. That is just obnoxious. There's something not right mentally about that for both teams. These things happen from time to time. If you look at the history of the NBA Finals, usually there's a blowout in there somewhere. But to have two ridiculous blowouts like that in complete reverse of each other is just bizarre. Like, you wonder if you could get some therapists together to round up these guys and have put them on a couch and talk to them about what it means to them to play on the road versus at home and try and delve into this. Because that's just whack. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. That said, no, Golden State's going to win this series. They're the better team. They're not going to lose three of the next four. Even if they lost all three in Cleveland, I would say they're going to win at home. Because if Cleveland would have went all three at home, I would not expect them to all of a sudden show up at Golden State with any confidence. I think they'd feel like, okay, we did all that at home, but now we're on the road and we're going to get smoked. And I expect Golden State to have the reverse confidence. So I think Golden State's going to win the series just by virtue of home court advantage. But I do think it's going to be more interesting from a game perspective. Not each individual game, but it's not going to be 4-0 like people were saying after two games. That was ridiculous. That wasn't going to happen. But it's just awful. Like, I don't even want to watch game four. I mean, I will. But I long for the days of, you want drama. And this isn't drama. This is just... it's just stupid. I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, I was talking with somebody, and it's like, we've been doing this my whole life. You know, who's been watching 30 years, 40 years? You watch a series, and you learn something, maybe get a hint of what's to come. And we were wondering, is it because there's such a reliance on the three-point shot? The teams hoisted up 58 last night, and that makes it so game-to-game, maybe? Who has the hot hand? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I could definitely buy into that being definitely part of it. And, once you start missing a bunch of those and the other team scores in transition, either off your misses or they're making them, you can fall behind 15 really quickly. Really, really quickly. And then if you're shooting threes to try to come back and you remain cold, then that number can balloon up. At the same time, though, if you get hot yourself, you're going to tighten things back up. But I definitely think that could definitely have something to do with it. I don't know. I keep thinking back to my favorite series of all time, and you just didn't see this. You just didn't see teams not show up, and that's the thing for me. It's not that the winning team. This is the caveat I had coming out of game two in game one in Golden State. You look at the box score. It's like Kyrie Irving is shooting 30% and has 6 turnovers and 5 assists. Is that really Golden State, or is that him from the neck up? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
LeBron's not being aggressive. Is that Golden State, or is that LeBron? You expect, Golden State to play well at home, of course, but I don't think they did anything to make Cleveland play that horrible. Like this, this isn't the I always go back to Chicago for something. This isn't the 85 Bears beating the Rams 21-0 in the NFC Championship game, where you knew they played that game 50 times at 50 different places. Eric Dickerson was going nowhere. Like, you just knew.
Right.
And this isn't Roger Clemens striking out people left and right or any other great pitcher, and you know that pretty much 9 times out of 10, he's going to be tough to hit. This is a situation where each of these games, the losing team just simply did not show up and spit up all over themselves. And yes, the other team did a good job, but no one does that good a job. You are supposed to win basketball games by 30, dude. Like, it's unnatural. It shouldn't happen by virtue of how the game works. You have to totally play like crap to lose by 30 in the NBA.
So I saw now that Jason Quick has joined with Dwight James to try and aggravate you with the best team ever.
They got me good on that.
Yeah, here's my new thing. You hear Kareem, you hear Pippen, Magic, all talking about how they would do against this Warrior team. And I'm like, now, wait a minute. If we got the Doc Brown time machine, as far as I'm concerned, I'd rather see the Bulls play the Lakers or the Lakers play the Celtics again. As far as I'm concerned, Golden State doesn't rate yet to match up with those teams. If we're going back in time, can't we find better matchups?
I would agree. The only reason why people are throwing Golden State in that mix is because of the 73.
Right.
Because then you say, well, this puts them with the upper echelon of the greatest single-season teams ever, and they won it last year, and they have a 2-time MVP. That's the only reason why, because clearly two titles, if they get two titles, does not come close to 6, nor does it come close to Magic winning 5 and going to the finals 9 times. You know how ridiculous that is?
Yes.
They went to the finals 9 times, and that was in, 12 years or something?
Yeah, no, from when he came up in 80 to when he retired in 91, they only missed out, I think, in 86 and 81. Otherwise,
now it's Houston.
Yeah, both times with Houston.
No, that's just ridiculous. Like that. So I don't want to hear about could Golden State beat them talk to me after they've won 4 titles at least. That said, yes, Magic and Kareem are arguably 2 of the top 5 players of all time. Like, if you're making your all-time starting 5, you'd be hard-pressed not to have them in your starting 5, or at least have – well, Magic has to be in anyone's starting 5. I can't believe anyone could come up with a point guard better than him. Kareem, if you want to argue Chamberlain, or you want to argue even Olajuwon or Shaq, which I disagree with, but you want to argue it, fine. Bill Russell, fine. But Kareem's in your top 2, or at least your second team all-time NBA. So that right there, and plus you got Worthy Hall of Famer, and you got Byron Scott, who was an all-star. Golden State doesn't run like that. Like, Golden State has one player who may someday be considered an all-time great in Steph Curry. Klay Thompson's never going to be considered a top 10 or top 20 player of all time, and no one else on that team is. So I just don't want to hear that nonsense. Like, I just don't even think it's close. Now, the three-point thing, that does matter. But here's what people forget about the past. They did not shoot three-pointers because they couldn't. Like, Byron Scott shot 43% in 1987. Which is really good, but he only took 3 a game. Well, why? Because that's just not what you did when you had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Right.
You know what I mean? You didn't come down jacking up threes. It's just, but if you said to them, okay, Michael Cooper shot 37% or whatever, Magic wasn't any good. But if you said to them, okay, you're going to have to make a few more threes because Golden State's going to shoot a lot of threes, and yeah, they can hit them. And plus, Kareem's going to shoot 75% against today's NBA centers. So it balances out, so I think that L.A. just runs away with it.
Yeah, like I said, if we're going to get the plutonium and the flux capacitor, I got way better matchups.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Bulls Lakers would be awesome.
All right, let's get to Oregon football. It's crazy. We're under 8 weeks from camp starting, and you hit us with your top 5 gotta-haves if this team's going to contend. So it's going to be an offense with another rookie quarterback. So you're saying Royce Freeman doesn't just have to be productive. He's got to be one of the best, not only backs, but players in the country.
So here's my 5. Prukup has to be Mariota-like. Freeman has to contend for the Heisman. It means go to New York. Carrington has to be special, like a dominant number one. And then the next 2 coming up, all right, for tomorrow, are going to be the secondary has to go from giving up a bunch of touchdowns to being locked down, and the front seven has to be unleashed, which connects with the defense being good in the secondary so they can unleash the demons and blitz the hell out of people. But, yeah, I mean, if you look at the only times the Ducks have been true national title contenders, the Harrington year, the 07 year until Dixon got injured, when they went to it in 2010, and when they went to it in 2014. What do all four of those teams have in common? Heisman candidate. Legit
yep.
Heisman candidate. Harrington was fourth. Dixon was favored to win it. LaMichael finished third, and Mario finished fourth. Or finished second. No, he won it. Sure, what the hell am I talking about? Sorry.
I saw you there.
I was like, what am I thinking? Okay, sorry. I was there. I was freaking there. Anyway, he won it. So, now, you could say it's a coincidence, but I don't think it is. And I think that Freeman needs to get 1,900 to 2,000 yards, 25 touchdowns. They need to ride the heck out of him. I think having Krukup be that dual-threat guy that Mariota was and that Vernon Adams lacked in that zone with that zone replay is going to open things up a little bit more for Freeman. Krukup could easily rush for 600 yards while passing for 3,000-plus. And then Carrington, if Carrington can be that legitimate – and I'm not saying they haven't had good receivers. Jeff Mayo was really good. Huff was really good. Demetrius Williams, Braylon Addison, et cetera, et cetera. But none of those guys were future first-round talent. I think Carrington is legit first-round talent. I don't think he's going to go in the first round. I think his baggage will probably bite him in the butt, but he could be a second-round pick and be that uncoverable guy where it doesn't matter what you do to me, you can't cover me kind of guy. That will help open things up, too. And then the offense, if all three of those things come into place, the offense will be caliber, the type of caliber you need to win the Pac-12 and maybe be 12-1 when you do win it and get a playoff berth.
All right, well, he's got to get
that. But that's a lot. That's a lot to ask for. We'll see.
Yeah, that's kind of a lot to kind of put on the plate, but I was talking with somebody who was like, he's got to have that reputation and nickname. Keyshawn had the best nickname when he was at USC. 7-11, always open. I want to move to the news that after a decade-long bout with Parkinson's, we lost the champ, Muhammad Ali. Who, you know, I'm of the age who, I mean, you know, I love Jeter, I love Reggie Jackson, but this guy, to me, when I was 10, he returned to the ring, and when I saw him beat Jerry Quarry, I was like, my theory is, if his first fight with Frazier happened now, the earth would crack in half. But of all the sports figures you followed, I mean, you know, what was Ali to you?
You know, I knew Ali through my dad and his friends, but at a really, really young age. Like, I vaguely remember him fighting the two with Spinks, and I remember watching those, and I remember him fighting Jimmy Young, and my dad's best friend saying he thought Ali lost that fight, but he got the decision. I remember Ernie Shaver, I remember Larry Holmes, and I've gone back and watched stuff, but I wasn't really, I mean, I was born in 68, so
right.
He pretty much ended his prime late 70s, so I was 8, 9, 10 in there, so I barely remember that stuff. But I remember that he was important, and I remember knowing that I liked watching him. I just don't remember everything clearly, but going back and watching him through the years, of course, I have several Ali fights on DVD that I've had for, you know, a couple decades that I've watched from time to time. But no, I mean, clearly, I mean, you know, it goes without saying how big of an impact he had on the world. And it's just the most fascinating thing about him is that he went from completely hated by a lot of people, and not just white people. I mean, there were black people. Black Christians didn't know what to do with him either.
No, absolutely.
You know, the Muslim thing, that, you know, black Christians, a lot of people think if you're black Muslim, all black people like you. No, this is a cold Christian Muslim thing is legit riff regardless of your race. And so a lot of African-Americans didn't know what to do with Ali, too. It's like, what the hell? You changed it. Your mama named you Cassius Clay. Like, everybody remember Rob Mosey, my man, sent me the meme of dude in the barbershop and coming to America. He was like, his mama named him Clay? I'm calling him Clay.
Yep.
So that was the belief of a lot of African-Americans back then. So that was going on. So to him to come through that tumultuous time of Vietnam War and to come out of it and to then fight his way back and be the person outside the ring he was to go from one of the most despised pro sports figures ever to the single most beloved ever, absolutely amazing. And it speaks to where we move from a society from the 60s to winning. I mean, he's popular again, obviously, 80s and 90s, but in 70s, 80s, 90s, but it shows how far we've come since then.
Well, I'll tell you what, his fight against Holmes was 2 days before my 20th birthday, and I disappeared at the end. I mean, I was like in tears. I couldn't watch it.
Yeah.
It was one of the worst things I ever saw.
I was 12, and I remember watching that going, oh, this is just awful.
No. Here we are 36 years later, and I don't feel right about it. But
one quick thing for people listening. You know, people who are bored with boxing and hate Mayweather fights, go on YouTube, call it the Frazier, especially the third Frazier fight, call it the Ken Norton fight. The first Frazier fight, those were wars, man. I mean, they were just 15 rounds, just Donnybrook, and just that's boxing.
You're preaching to the choir here. Hey, good stuff. Always appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the finals and see if we actually get one. And we'll catch up with you next Thursday.
All right, man. Take care.
Take it easy. Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sportsnet.